Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to be talking a little bit about gardening today on the show. Whether you're just thinking of starting a garden or you want to improve the one you have already, our guest today says that growing what you love is key to a perfect garden. Emily Murphy, our guest, with us via Skype today. She's an expert gardener who's trained in ethnobotany, environmental science, and garden design. She teaches and speaks about gardening around the country, and her writing has appeared in many online publications, including Better Homes and Gardens. She's also a photographer, cook, and creator of the blog Pass the Pistol. Her new book is called Grow What You Love, 12 Food Plant Families to Change Your Life. What do you love about gardening? What would you like to know about starting a garden? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And Emily Murphy, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Oh, thanks so much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. Well, you've been a gardener now for a while. How'd you become a gardener?
Well, it was sort of osmosis in the beginning. I was lucky to be raised in a family of gardeners, and that sort of evolved into me studying botany and environmental science in college, and it sort of built from there. I kept my own garden and in a variety of spaces, and then kept pursuing it and studied garden design, as you mentioned, and started writing so that I could continue my own studies, my self-study, and teaching gardening. So I've taught organic gardening, and I've run school gardens as well, and which was an amazing experience in itself.
Oh, the school gardens are just wonderful. The ones that I know of, at least here in Wisconsin. Well, tell us about the title, Grow What You Love, and talk about why that's important.
Grow what you love. Well, I believe that when you grow what you love, wonderful things happen. And I spent a number of years trying to, you know, sort out, you know, as we all do, you grow a number of things, and you grow them because either because they're available at the nursery or because you think you should grow them. And I've come to realize with the little amount of space and time that I know I have, and I'm sure many other people have, it's really important to focus on the plants that make the biggest difference in your life. And as I worked with my blog, Pass the Pistol, which is sort of a play on words for, you know, grow what you love and pass it on, pass the pistol, P-I-S-T-I-L as in part of a flower, mm-hmm. You know, share that love. And that is honestly where the book title came from. It's focusing on the things that matter most and sharing those things, because when we share the things we love, it's infectious and it grows from there.
And, you know, you make a bold statement there in your subtitle, which is 12 food plant families to change your life. That's a bold statement. How do those plants and how does gardening change people's lives?
Well, with that subtitle in particular, I worked hard to curate the plants that were the best of the kitchen garden, the easiest to grow, the plants that provided the most abundance with the least amount of space and time, plants that provided the most flavor, or that were multitaskers like edible flowers and companion plants, plants that, you know, invite nature and wildlife and diversity into our gardens. And they're also the chef's choice. And so that is where that bold title comes in, because I'd like to think that, you know, okay, we can start with the plants we love, but let's temper that with climate and available space, what's possible to grow in your garden. If you're working with shade, you know, you might have to give up your tomato dreams for the promise of greens and plants like parsley. But you also might discover that you love these plants too, once, because they grow on you over time. And so the idea is that as you evolve, your garden evolves too, or conversely, as your garden evolves, you evolve too, which that's where the change your life comes into play, because I found that it can be transformative. It's simple, but I think those simple things are the important things in life.
Well, your book is lovely. We have some wonderful photography in the book, and it's just a joy to look at the photos as well as read the, of course, the accompanying descriptive information that you have. I really enjoyed looking going through it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that because I worked very hard on the imagery. I did provide about half of the photos for the book, and that was. It was really important to me for the photos to be cohesive and coherent throughout the book. And I worked with a husband and wife team for the other half because I am featured in the book. And yep. It's very hard to take pictures of yourself. But I look for people for a photographer. In this case, I was lucky to find this team that were similar to my style so that the book would read or you could view it as its own story. So the book could be read in multiple ways. You can read it from cover to cover, but you could also read it for the imagery because I feel like that is it's important to be inspired as important as it is to be informed. And
well,
they go hand in hand.
Yeah, and there's a certain There's a certain view that you portray in those photos that is really nice. It's thoughtful and it's peaceful in a lot of ways for me.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it kind of makes you want to get out there and garden, to be perfectly honest.
that was my goal. So you just made my day. That's the tops for me because that was the goal, is for people to see how easy it is and how much joy, again, it can bring. And so the imagery is of my three gardens. I did adopt two gardens. I have my home garden, which right now is a deck garden. Mm-hmm. And so the images from that garden are containers. I garden in troughs and wine boxes and, you know, things like that, things that are easy to move around and light. And then I adopted a garden, which I call the Knoll Garden. It's a really beautiful spot. I was out on a trail run, and I looked down from this trail, and it's someone's backyard, but it's a really big piece of property. So the backyard is up on a hill, which is why it's called the Knoll. And there's this little tiny garden encircled by a fence, and inside the fence are two raised beds. And yeah. They were fallow. You could tell they had grass growing up out of them and no one had been planting in them. And I found the owner and I asked, can I borrow that space? I would love to plant in the ground. And they said, yes. And so that's that garden. And that garden is peaceful. It's yeah. set by itself and it's lovely.
You have there's some wonderful photos that there's a beauty of you. I probably, where is it? Page 36 or 7, if I remember right, of you in that garden. And it just looks so peaceful.
it's so peaceful. And in the spring, like April, May, when the bees are swarming, the honeybees, I'm in the garden and I can hear the bees in the surrounding forest. Sometimes like when they get really loud, it can be a little unnerving. Like, are they going to swarm right over my head? I'm not ready. But at the same time, it's such a neat sound to hear. And of course, there's all sorts of songbirds in the spring. And I've been very fortunate to have that, to be able to borrow that space.
Sue in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Sue, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Okay. I'm renting a plot that has sun, so finally I can have my first big vegetable garden. My husband really wants corn, and I know that's wind pollinated, so it needs more space from what I've read. But I'm really intrigued by this Three Sisters planting, and I read on the website for the Farmer's Almanac that you could do it in an area as small as 4 foot square. Do you think they know
that's
that true. Is, Three Sisters?
And the Three Sisters are corn, beans, and squash.
Right. I just love that whole idea.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. You can do that. If you'd like, you can also substitute corn with sunflowers, but it sounds like you you want corn.
Well, I thought sunflowers would be better, but when I looked at companion planting, it didn't sound like that was maybe a good idea. Okay.
You can absolutely do that. The corn grows up and you plant the beans around the base of the corn or sunflowers or something like that. And then the corn supports the beans as they grow up. So in a sense, that's its own trellis. And then the squash grow around the feet of the corn and the beans. They protect the soil. They help hold in soil moisture. And they also have those prickly leaves, right? And so they sort of help a little bit with pest control as well as weed control. They cover the ground. And so, and then the beans fix nitrogen in the soil, and corn are heavy feeders. And so it is kind of a beautiful marriage of plants. And it's worth trying if you have a 4x4. Even 2x2, just try it in one small plot and see how it works, and let those squash kind of trail out into your path if you don't have that much room to actually plant them in your plot.
Yeah.
And when the corn is ripe and ready to pick, here's what a friend told me. He likes to boil the water and carry the water out to the corn patch. And then he opens up the leaves from the corn, and then he dips the corn right straight into the boiling water so that it's as fresh as it can possibly be.
Wow.
that sounds magical.
I always thought, I never tried that, but there have been times when I have had the water boiling on the stove and cut the corn and moved it straight away into the house and put it right in. And that probably works just as well.
It probably does.
Thank you, Sue. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, here on the Ideas Network. We're visiting with Emily Murphy, expert gardener and author of Grow What You Love, 12 Food Plant Families to Change Your Life. You can join in again, 800-642-1234. You know, Jill Nadeau, my producer, was really taken with the idea that you have for using a trough, a water trough, as a gardening, a place to put your soil and raise your crops.
Yes. Using a watering trough is, it sort of simplifies the process because it's already made and they're fairly light to move around without soil. So you can pick one up at a feed store. That's where I found mine, is a feed store. And it fits into my car. I drive a 2002 Eurovan, and believe it or not, I can fit a 5 to 6 foot watering trough in the main compartment and drive it home myself. You can put holes in the bottom for drainage. You fill it with soil, and you can grow so much food in it. It's really pretty amazing.
And it's raised up.
And it's raised up, right. And you can get them at different heights. So they have them at 1 foot, with the sides being like 1 foot high off the ground, or even 2 feet. So you have more soil depth. You could even grow a small tree in them if you really wanted to, like a lemon tree or another tree. I guess in Wisconsin, you wouldn't grow a lemon tree, but you could grow something else. But I can pack them with food. I can last summer in one that is 2 feet wide by about 6 feet long. I had two tomato plants. I had lots of basil. I even had some pole beans, and I just crammed it full with as much as I could, and it thrived.
Well, we do grow lemons and lime trees here. I have my own lime tree, Limey, who produces a lot of limes every year, and Limey sits outside all summer and fall, and then in the wintertime, she stays inside in my bedroom with a south-facing window, and smells great this time of year. Oh. She's in flower.
Oh, that's great. I do love the fragrance.
Well, let's go to, let's take another call. Drew in Madison, it's your turn now. Hi, Drew.
Hi there. I have a question, and I'm not a gardener. I've never worked in a garden, but now I want to, and I don't know where to start. I love flowers and herbs to start with, I guess, but I don't know where to start, and what are some easy maintenance plants or flowers and herbs that I can try this season?
Sounds like your book is pretty much ready-made for Drew.
It does. Of course, start with the things you love. But if you're going to start with any one plant group, herbs, I'm sure, Larry, you would agree, herbs are you know, they provide the biggest impact.
Yeah.
They have tons of flavor, and they're incredibly easy to grow. They generally don't take up much space. Many are hardy, like thyme. They're hardy down to zone 4, and so they can overwinter outside. And some of them you can grow indoors on your windowsill, wherever it's sunny. And you can really start with just 2 or 3 in a small container. I would just start there. Just start with a handful. And honestly, you know, since you're new to gardening, you could start your garden from seed. But with herbs, I find it's kind of nice to try before you buy. And so you can go to the nursery and you can smell the plants, rub them with your fingers and smell that fragrance. That fragrance will give you an idea of what the flavor will be. Or you can even take a little nibble when no one's looking and make sure it's the flavor you want to cook with, because that's really the ultimate goal in some ways, right? Is to have,
gotcha.
Is to have something you,
yep.
you can use in the kitchen. And
okay.
I would start there and use a good healthy soil. Soil is key to success, and make sure they have good drainage.
Okay. What about flowers? I have a huge garden in front and in the back, and I don't know what to do with it. So what do you recommend?
Oh, so you have a current flower garden?
No, I have a front yard and a backyard, which can be used as a garden space.
I gotcha.
But
okay.
I don't know what to do with it. It's just I'm unattended right now, and it looks pretty bad. So I want to take care of it, but I don't know how.
All right.
Yeah, well, I would say with that is to start with a small space. Try not to tackle all of it at once, because I think it's good to use some baby steps, and you might want to transform it, but it might end up being too much, and that can be discouraging. So start with a small space and maybe choose the sunniest spot, because it will give you the biggest, the largest amount of options to choose from as far as plants to grow. And, you know, if you're looking for flowers, the book does feature edible flowers and companion plants. Those are great plants to start with, but you can mix ornamentals in, plants like dahlias or cosmos, plants that bring birds and bees to your garden. Mix in some edibles and underplant with herbs in that same space. Just be sure, if it is open and it's not in a raised bed, to consider what critters might be about, what might want to come eat your garden before you do.
Gotcha.
Before they have an opportunity to flower. And again, start with good soil. So if you are planting in the ground and you are going to be eating whatever you're growing from that ground, you might also want to consider having the soil tested to make sure that it's not contaminated. Unless you know the soil quality already and you're comfortable with it, then of course plant away.
Mm-hmm.
I will start slow.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are many good options for you out there, Drew, and good luck, and let us know how you do here with it. Appreciate that very much. I do a show, Emily, on Fridays called Garden Talk, where I'll have a guest expert come on every Friday and talk about gardening of one sort or another. And I hope many of those folks are listening today, because you're giving us some great information. Let's go to Pat in Cumberland next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. My question is about, cloth bag gardening. I purchased quite a few 1 year because I ran out of garden space and started with potatoes. And then I tried some, like, green peppers and found that I don't get a big bounty of potatoes out of those bags. I'm not sure exactly what kind of soils to put in. Generally, what I do is steal from my regular garden and put garden soil in the bags because they're pretty good sized. And then I put the potato eyes in the bags and everything. But any suggestions? Maybe I'm planting the wrong things in those bags.
Are you familiar with cloth bag gardening, Emily?
I am. And it does, the size of the bag does make a difference, of course. The more space those roots have to develop, then your plants are more likely to thrive. I have found something similar, though, when I'm growing potatoes in a bag like that, that the crop is not, you know, I'm lucky to get 10 pounds of potatoes out of 5 or 6 eyes to start with. It doesn't seem like much. I think that the key with potatoes is to look for a variety that is an abundant, that is, described as a prolific producer, okay. And see if that helps. It's really the variety, I think, that's key to look at when you're growing in a bag like that.
Sure. I was trying to remember the potato variety. I planted the South American purple potato varieties last year, and I had really good luck with them. They're smaller potatoes, and I actually planted them, frankly, right in the straw from that was left over from my straw bale garden plot from the year before, and they did pretty well in that straw as it decomposed.
Isn't that so cool?
I thought that others who have grown that purple potato in pots have done pretty well with it too. So I don't know why it wouldn't work in a bag.
In a bag, yeah. I think that's a great idea. I think I have to try that.
Works pretty well actually.
And I was wondering, like with the straw bales, if the potatoes got too warm, being in black bags, and I do put them in full sun because I want them to, you know, max out as far as sunlight. But
you don't want to plant the potatoes in straw bales too quickly. You need to the inside of that bale when it's fermenting or what have you, right at the beginning when you're adding water and fertilizer, it gets really hot in there. So you want to wait. Maybe 10 days after the bale, you feel the bale is ready before you put the potatoes in. Otherwise, you're going to cook your potatoes.
Cook them before they grow.
Anyway, that's been my experience. Emily, I don't know about you, but that's been the experience I've had.
Well, yeah, thank you very much.
I think those small potatoes are helpful.
Those are really tasty, and they look great on a plate, and they're highly nutritious. Pat, good luck. Thank you for calling. And Steve and Marinette, we go to you. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a raised bed garden. I had just a flat ground garden that was productive for years. I got some blight, and it was recommended that I put it to sleep for a year, and I did, and I built a raised bed. That was good, but after a couple of years, it just seems like the soil is depleted, and I'm concerned. I know I can test the soil, but I'm concerned that my raised bed isn't tall enough. Is there a height I have to have so that the plants can grow down deep enough?
It depends on what you're growing. So if you want to grow plants that are like tomatoes that have a lot of top growth, then you're going to need a deeper bed. And so, you know, minimum 12 inches, but really 18 inches is ideal. And if you can afford 2 feet, that's even better because it gives you more, it's more dynamic. But if you're focusing on herbs and greens and even some root vegetables like Tokyo market turnips and beets and carrots, you could, you know, especially the shorter variety carrots, you could get away with 12 inches. It sounds like if you're having trouble with your soil, and I do think it's important. I'm not sure how you're treating it from one season to the next, but I have found I've had so much luck with top dressing my beds in the spring and the fall. I will actually use an organic manure, locally sourced manure, And then I will top that again with a couple of inches of compost. And in the winter, I will even put on some straw. And in California, where I'm living now, I'm lucky to get seedless rice straw. So I can decrease the amount of weeds I'm transplanting into my garden. But then in the spring, the soil is amazing. You'll find you have tons of worms and animals living in there, and it's really ready to go. And I like the manure in the sense that it's balanced, and I love using compost as a means for cultivating healthy soil.
And you put that on in the fall, right?
I do put that on in the fall.
I thought you mentioned summer earlier, and I thought, no, I think you meant fall.
Yeah, no, fall. And I also do that sometimes in spring, depending upon the bed and what I plan to grow in it. So you don't want to manure beds that you're going to directly seed root vegetables like carrots in those beds. So you would avoid using manures. You can use compost, of course. Because it makes the soil dense and it's rich and it can burn those seeds and those seedlings as they're growing. It's just too rich. But I do that especially in the fall, and if I'm overwintering the bed and I don't plan to use it in the winter months.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
How about you, Larry? What do you do?
Well, that's what around here, it's a good idea if you can do what you suggest in the fall, and you know, over winter, you know, it gets cold here, those things work themselves into the soil and become part of the soil, and by spring, then you've got a pretty good mixture of soil there to grow your plants.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
Oh, great. So my bed is just over a foot tall, and you're recommending I add another 6 inches to that. And what type of new soil then? And do I have to rototill all of that soil into the existing soil?
I wouldn't. I would leave it unless it's really compacted. If it's dense and really hard, you might want to work it a little bit. But honestly, by adding healthy soil and planting in it, it will work itself out. You can then fill that extra amount of space you're creating with. You can buy most nurseries or garden centers or landscape supply companies offer a soil that's designed for raised beds, and it's oftentimes a topsoil and compost mix. You can just fill it with compost. I have done that before as well. Or if it's not that big of a bed, you can buy bagged an organic bagged planting mix and add that to it with a blend of compost.
Okay.
I'm pretty liberal with compost, honestly.
Sure. Yeah, makes good sense.
This is a very large bed. I grow about 200 corn every year because I love to look at it out my window, and I can't see my neighbor's houses. I love that all the time. But I just love it. I feel like I'm in the country, but I also grow tomatoes and peppers. And thank you very much. I'm going to try that fall. I live in the north, too. I want to try that fall soil preparation. That's a great idea.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much, Steve, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Tim and Marinette, on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I have a question. When and how should I prune my Concord grape plant, and should I expect to get grapes every year from that?
There is the soil conditions and the winter conditions are different here than they are in California, although Emily, I'm sure you have some advice on this, but I do want to advertise or promote a little bit a UW Extension publication, University of Wisconsin Extension publication called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, because it has a very, you can get it online. Just go online to put in, I'm suddenly blanking on the name of the source. You put in UW Extension Gardening Learning Store, that's the name of the place. Go to UW Extension Learning Store, and at the Learning Store, you'll find a publication on growing grapes in Wisconsin, and it's really a good book, pamphlet, and it's free, and you can just read it offline or copy it offline if you want.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, I don't know, Emily, I'm trying to remember if you had, I don't think you have any grapes in your book.
I don't have any grapes in my book. I do have some experience with grapes. I always recommend pruning them when they're dormant, before they leaf out, because they produce their fruit on new growth. And again, with any plant, provide them a healthy soil, plenty of sunlight. And I love Larry's suggestion of using the UC Extension as a resource, because they're your local resource that understand the varieties and the challenges to growing a plant like a grape in your region.
And I just had some personal experience with it because a good friend of mine has quite a few grapes vines and asked me about it, and I suggested that book, and he, you know, the next year he said to me, "Oh my gosh, you were sure right about that book and the information in it." So I had some other people sort of backing up what I was saying there. Thanks again, Tom, for calling. I appreciate it. You can join in too, by the way. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call. You have, all the basics of growing, and you have a number of recipes in the book that I found really interesting too. A couple that, I'm a frittata person, and you have a favorite frittata that appealed a lot to me, and another one, a rosemary honey ice cream that sounded really good.
Oh, yeah, that ice cream is amazing, and you can mix. So the idea with the recipes in the book is that they're mix and match. They're process based, so whatever it is you're growing, you can substitute one ingredient for another. And I love the rosemary honey ice cream, but if you're growing lavender, for instance, you can use the same recipe and make a lavender honey ice cream. And with the favorite frittata, right now, actually, that is my favorite recipe, partly because it uses the ingredients I have growing in my garden right now. It uses chard, it uses parsley, kale. I even have mustards, and you whip all that together, you prepare it and mix it in with your eggs, and I throw it into a cast iron skillet, and it's really lovely. It's lovely, and it's easy. And I have it with breakfast, I have it with lunch, and I have it with dinner.
There you go. That's one thing I like about them too, and they're always fun to make in a cast iron skillet.
It makes it's just easy.
It's easy. That's why it's fun. Samantha in Arcadia, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Bless you. Anyway, I was just wondering what would be the best vegetables or plants. Yeah, vegetables to grow in a 20 by 20 acre plot for somebody like me that's just starting out. You know, what would be the most easiest vegetables to grow? Because I'll eat any vegetable or fruit.
So you got a 20-foot by 20-foot plot. Okay. So what?
That's a big garden.
That's a good-sized garden, yeah.
So you can grow a lot of food in that, yeah.
Yeah, so what would you recommend for the beginner, Emily?
I always recommend the things you love, of course. And if you love tomatoes, I think there's nothing better than a homegrown tomato. I always plant tomatoes in the summer. Cucumbers and plants that you might not find as readily at the grocery store that are unique, like lemon cucumbers. You rarely find them in the market. They're fabulous. They have prickly skins on the lemon cucumber, so they naturally deter pests. They're less likely to be eaten by foraging critters. They leave some for you, thankfully. And pole beans, plants that provide abundance, and then also cover ground. Pole beans and bush beans will help fix nitrogen in the soil. Underplant with herbs, keep a spot for flowers or sprinkle flowers throughout and have some fun with it. And I like to think of a garden as, you know, as a place to play and a place to contemplate and experiment in, and start with a handful of things. If you're new to planting in that space, maybe just plant in part of it to start with and see what does really well in your climate, and have some fun with it. Just experiment and see what grows well, and try a few different things, because you might find that one grows better than another. A few different varieties of tomatoes or peppers or cucumbers, for that matter. Maybe use a corner of it for some perennial edibles like asparagus or rhubarb and get those started. And then a few years, you'll have those to harvest without really having to do any more work. That's sort of the things I would start with. Yeah.
Good. And also, I was just wondering really quick, how would I till it and get it all? A guy in my building, it's actually at the apartment building behind us, and they let us do this, but the guy that had it, he moved away or had to be put in a nursing home, and there was, he never really took very good care of it. He wanted to plant, but never really did, so it, a lot of his stuff turned to weeds, and, you know, it never really, you know, now I'm not sure how to go about doing that either, you know, because I'm going to take it over next.
Well, one thing, if you want to get right.
So is it?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry, Emily.
No, I want to hear what you have to say.
Oh, I was going to say, if it's covered with weeds, one thing that you might want to do is cover the ground. You could use even cardboard or newspaper to sort of keep the weeds choked out, and plant your plants in spaces kind of right through the cardboard or right through the paper, because then you would be killing the weeds while you were providing a spot for the plants to grow. So that's something I, just in thinking in terms of if you wanted to do it without, say, applying chemicals to kill the weeds, that would be a way to start a garden. Work up those areas where you are going to do your planting, and then cover the rest and put your plants in and your seeds in and see what happens.
Okay. Love your show. Thank you.
Thank you. Emily, are you in agreement on that?
I actually love that idea. And the other thing that the cardboard does is it chokes out the weeds, but then as it biodegrades, it adds some organic matter to the soil, and it also makes it easier to weed later, because those weeds will probably come back, but it loosens the soil and it makes it easier to weed later.
Well, on that note, here we are out of time. How are you? I hope you're selling a lot of copies of your book.
I hope I am too. I know that they've shipped quite a few copies. It just released March 1st, and so there's not a lot of statistics in yet. I did have a really amazing review from Publishers Weekly, so that was really special. They took a lot of care with it, and it made me feel great, because as you can imagine, I spent a lot of time and energy on this book to try to make it wonderful and to put everything I could into it to not only help people but inspire them and get people out there growing.
And you're speaking tomorrow at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show at 12:15, and then you're going to be in Wisconsin on March 21st at the Verona Public Library for the Madison Area Garden Clubs.
That's right. I'm meeting with the Madison Area Garden Clubs at the Verona Library, as you mentioned. I think it's at 6:30 to 8:30. And then I'm also in Spring Greens at the Arcadia Bookstore the next night. That's at 7 o'clock in the evening.
Well, you're going to love both Verona and Spring Green. I'm pretty sure of that. Emily, it's been great talking with you. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Larry. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Emily Murphy, our guest. She's the author of Grow What You Love, 12 Food Plant Families to Change Your Life. Again, she'll be in Verona, Wisconsin, at the Public Library for the Madison Area Garden Clubs on March 21st and March 22nd. She'll be at the Arcadia Books in Spring Green at 7 p.m. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.